radio can be in your face with passion.
Paralyzes the entire nervous system.
Like us on Facebook and continue the conversation.
I'll do it.
98.5, the Sports Hub. You get to experience it for breakfast.
He's like, hello!
The Toucher and Rich Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Zero level concern at this stage. I'll come in Tuesday night, and we'll see what happens.
There's a left-hand dribble for LeBron falling away in the baseline. That's the shot he was working on all morning when he beat the rest of the Cavs here by about an hour. He knocks it down. LeBron has 16 already.
For me, game one has always been a fill-out game for me, if you ever followed my history, so...
She thinks she missed the train to Mars. She's out back counting.
LeBron, smart, gobbles him up, two in a shot clock. Crazy fall.
Oh,
three is good. An audible gasp from the building that he has tortured before, and LeBron is doing it again now. LeBron has 19 points in 8 minutes and 33 seconds to start game two.
You just have to keep, make it as hard as possible on LeBron. We're just going to have to be that again on Tuesday night.
Our mindset is we don't back down from anybody, Doris. But we come here to play.
Morris drives right side, pass to him, scores it on the foul. And Marcus Morris screaming into the face of Tristan Thompson.
Hey, what you going to do now?
And it didn't take long for this thing to get tested. Thompson punches the rebound in the air, but it ends up in the hands of Rozier. He's going to beat James down the floor and slam it hard with the right hand.
Go for that one, Mr. James. Get some of that.
James, he's going to try one of those left side threes, and he got it. Tatum picks it up, floats it out towards Morris, swings to the open man. Rozier, three, got it. 23-11 is the Boston run, their largest lead of game two. Smart taps the rebound out to Tatum, attacks the paint, reverses it up, no good. Smart flies in for an offensive rebound, puts it off the window and in. And a night that began as a masterpiece being painted by LeBron has been graffitied up by Marcus Smart. Jaylen Brown all alone for three. Here's Horford, spins on Kevin Love, reverses it up and in, scored on the foul. You were waiting for Al Horford all night. When the money's on the table, playoff Al busts through the door. Smart lob, Horford catches and got fouled, pushed in the back by J.R. Smith. And now we got more trouble.
Keep letting the bully keep picking on you. He's going to keep picking on you until you finally stand up, and that's what I tried to do.
Jay Larinaga comes to get Marcus Smart. Phil Lynch, Celtics director of security, kind of yanking Marcus Smart out of any trouble here.
One of my guys was down, and I took offense to it.
Smart for Horford. He's taking that three right over Kevin Love, and he sticks it. Smart catches. Good look. Deep three. Money. Back to Rozier. Attacks the glass. Lays it up and in. And the Celtics are going to pull this off.
You got to be kidding me.
At the end of the day, the greatest player in the world is on one end of the floor. But the Celtics are running him around in circles.
This is the first time you've been down 0-2 in the East in 10 years. How do you think you will digest that challenge over the next couple of days and prepare yourself for what's going to be called for from here?
How will I digest it? I'm not going to lose sleep over it.
A stirring come-from-behind win in what may have been the Marcus Smart game of all Marcus Smart games. The final score, Boston 107, Cleveland 94. The Celtics lead the Eastern Conference Finals 2-0.
Not 8-5, the Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Mike Gorman in studio with us.
Are you still enjoying it?
Yeah, sure.
After all these years.
Can I say a quick thing about Grandy, by the way?
Sure, yeah.
I heard more Sean here this morning than I usually hear.
Yeah.
Radio announcers, play-by-play announcers, can get betrayed by the fact that the crowd noise precedes their call, so you know that they're behind the action.
Yeah.
Grandy is right on top of the action every time, right? With every basket, with every play, he's a half step ahead of everybody in the building. He's real good.
Well, we learned that there's a lot of plays, because... He doesn't have the most advantageous spot to do the play-by-play.
No, he calls everything off the TV. Everything off the TV.
So he's talked to us about the nightmare of if you go to an arena, and it rarely happens now, but there's times where he goes to an arena and the TV feed that is at a place where he maybe can't see is behind what's actually going on the court.
Yeah.
We've actually talked to Danny Ainge about this. Like, why do you have these radio guys so far away where they can't see what's happening? But Grandy is excellent at it. I mean, the guy...
He's solid. He is so solid.
He's good at it. And the Cedric Maxwell is there next to him.
Every once in a while.
He does it pretty lame. Which we have ripped on before. And he knows we've ripped on him before. But I thought he's
they're usually well written. But
well, written is the key. Written well in advance.
Neither of them drive cars, which I find very interesting.
That is interesting. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. They're a car service's dream. The two of them, whenever we land and get into a city.
And it's funny because he's like, Cedric, well, he's a city guy. He doesn't need a car. And I'm like, well, he has to go to Burlington all the time. Like, there's...
car service.
Yeah, they have to go to the Hamskin, whatever, the place to get the plane.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, yeah.
Hanscom, whatever the place is. Yeah,
that's exactly how
it reads.
Right. Well, I've never. Strangely enough, Mike, you might not believe this, but I've never flown out of that particular private plane airport. I have not.
Are you still enjoying this though? After all these years, I mean, this is what year was this for you?
37.
This is your 37th year, is it still?
Yeah, it is. I got to admit, it is. I mean, there were obviously times in the past when it wasn't, but this team is just there's so much fun to watch. Being associated with Brad Stevens is going to long term is something I'll look back on because I think he's kind of one of the great coaches that has coached in this game. And you know, I love Smart. I love Rozier. I love the way they play. You know, Baines out there. People get upset with Baines. I'm saying you can't ever get upset with Baines because he's given you 110% every single trip up the court.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's been a really fun team to do. And Tommy's it's put a spark back in Tommy because he likes the team so much. He was saying last night, you know, this is a Celtic team that he wished he could play for. Just to play with these guys.
Which, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Was there ever a team, Mike, that like you just thought were the majority of it, you just didn't enjoy being around them? You don't have to be specific if you don't want to, but you just thought that...
Personality-wise?
Yeah, like you thought they were bad guys.
We had some questionable teams there during the 90s.
Yeah.
Late 90s.
Yeah.
We had, you know... The Ricky Davis crew. Yeah,
Somehow his name always seems to pop up whenever you bring these things up.
He was quite a character. You know, Big Baby was quite a character. We had some interesting people come by, but the last 3 or 4 years, just watching this whole thing build with Brad and watching him develop as a pro coach has been a lot of fun to be a part of. So I want to stick around until at least one more parade.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean,
one more duck boat ride.
And why are you saying it like that?
Yeah.
So if they win a championship, you're going to retire?
Well, if they win it this year, no.
So you're just being like kind of poetic. I just want to be around for one more dugout.
Sure, yeah. It's a good line I've used it before.
It's dead now. Called you out of it before. Well, they are, you know, got a 2-0 lead in the Eastern Conference Finals.
So who do you roll with again when you go on the road? Like when you go out to dinner, I know you and Scal.
Scal all the time.
Okay. Yeah, anyone else?
Our producer, our director, font guy who travels with us. Graphics guy. Sorry, Zach. There's about 5 or 6 of us, Abby.
Okay.
Yeah.
But Granny and Max, they're kind of do their own thing.
Two solo acts.
Yeah.
Yeah. The time they get off, they spend more time together on air than they do off air.
Yeah, they told us that. San Antonio is the one place.
Right, the one place every year they go out to dinner together. They don't talk. They just go out to dinner together.
but Mike, I like the reason they've both given to us is that like you don't want to disrupt the on-air
keep
chemistry.
It fresh.
You want to keep it fresh. Right. And you're just like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, what are you talking about?
Did you and Tommy when Tommy was traveling with the team?
Yes.
Did you and Tommy used to hang out, or was that kind of a thing where you're on the air together?
We went out. I told you guys a story about we ended up in a gay bar in Denver.
Hang on, no, I don't remember this.
Yeah,
no, I think he actually told this story once.
He told this story. And that's happened to me hundreds of times, by the way.
This bar is what?
This music's got a good beepity bop to it. Yeah.
What are all these disco lights
look
for?
At all these guys.
These are real men. They look like all of Australia.
Look at these hairy bastards. Yeah. So I like a man with a good mustache.
Tommy just begs imitation, doesn't he?
He's the best. So what was, real quick, what was his reaction?
You're all manly like a young Rock Hudson.
That was a real man. So what was that like? Just real quick, because I don't remember this. What was Tommy's reaction when you went to this gay bar?
Well, we were going to Denver, and it was the first trip we were going together to Denver. And he's like, I got this great bar. I got to show you. I went there all the time when I used to be.
Tommy said this.
Yeah. So he said, well, bring everybody. Let me go. So 5 of us go to this bar. That as soon as you walked in, you were like, whoa. this is not what Tommy thinks it is. And Tommy, God love him, is totally oblivious. So he just goes right to the bar. He's like, get some drinks going on. And all of a sudden, people are coming over to talk to us. And the rest of us are kind of sliding backwards a little bit. But yeah, so we didn't let Tommy pick restaurants after that.
How long was it until somebody told him? Or he figured
it out.
What does
he care?
Half hour.
And he was like, I don't care. Yeah, like, drinks are still cold.
It wasn't a question of caring. He's like, where's the menu?
Yeah.
So when I was in Atlanta, there was a sports bar that I worked at that was on 10th and Peachtree. And on the way, walking there, there was a gay bar called Blake's. And I would go and I'd want to watch football. Like, I'd be hungover and it'd be like 12:30 and I'd want to go in. And like half the time I would just go, I'm just going into Blake's.
Oh, sure.
Like, I'm just going into the gay bar to watch. Because they had it all on.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? But this really did bother me. No one ever hit on me, not once.
Oh,
no one
really?
Ever gave me the time of day.
Mm.
But not. I wasn't yet a rugged double bear.
You were not like a rugged double bear, as you were. Yeah. So how improbable is this, what this team is doing? Like, when you sit back, I mean, because now we're kind of used to the things that they've been doing, or not used to it, but, you know, at this point, there's a little bit of expectation that we didn't have at the beginning of the season. When you look at where they started and where they are now and without their two major components, how improbable is this, out of all the things that you've seen in the NBA?
Very, very improbable. They really showed us something early, though, that we didn't realize, is when they came back with that 17-game win streak after Hayward goes down.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody thought, like, oh, this is going to be a disaster. They come back home, they lose the home opener, they're 0-2, and they're going to go, this is just going down the chute here.
Yeah.
And then they rally, and they win 17 games in a row. And the thing was how they won those games. You remember that it's not like they went in and blew people out, won by 15 or 20. They just scrapped all the time. They were down.
They weren't very good, if I remember. No. Like, they almost every third quarter, they would like go down by a ton.
Brad Stevens would say that over and over and over again. We're really not that good.
Yeah.
We're just finding ways to win.
Yes, he would. But they did find ways to win.
Yep.
They found them every night, and a different guy found them. So this whole relationship grew with the fans that, you know, hey, yeah, we got no Hayward, and at the latter part of the season, we got no Kyrie, but that doesn't matter. We can still win, you know. The guy who's got that Brad Stevens T-shirt now, have you seen that?
No.
It's the guy in the crowd who's Waitley gets on the big board, and he stands up, and he's got a white shirt and tie on. He rips off the tie and rips open the shirt. He's just got a shirt that says Brad Stevens underneath.
Oh, wow. That's his shtiz, does it every night?
Okay. What a life that man must lead.
Well, he gets a moment on the big board.
Yeah.
That big board thing is...
I know.
People
it's
die
sad.
Here. Yeah. I'm trying to hide all the time. I'm trying to sit down low with my seat. So.
Well, you're not doing a good job. They're putting you on TV every 5 seconds.
Well, well, he's not the guy wearing...
I have nothing to talk about.
Does it kill you, though? I mean, like, is there part of you that when you're watching these games, you wish you were calling them?
Oh, I hate this. Hate it. I mean, I've talked to some people in the league about it, but it's all about money, obviously.
Yeah.
ESPN and Turner want some exclusivity. And they especially wanted, and I'm not trying to blow my own horn here, but we do a really nice job on the broadcast, I think, as a team, producing it.
Without a doubt. Yeah.
And so... whenever the ratings come out in Boston, we kill them.
Right.
When we go head-to-head with Turner, go head-to-head with ESPN, we bury them.
Oh, without a doubt.
So they don't want to see us.
Of course. Of course.
Other cities, a lot of cities in the NBA, if the game's on ESPN, I'm talking about in December and January, not playoff time, but if the game's on ESPN, the home team just won't even do it because they'll just get killed in the rating, where it's just the opposite for us here in Boston. So to go back to your original question, yeah, it really pisses me off that I can't do these games. It really does.
Do you find
it's like, you know, I've used this analogy before, but it's like you date the girl all year long, and then the prom comes along, and somebody says, see you later.
Sure.
I'm going to step in here.
The biggest, best moments.
Mike Breen steps in front of me and says,
you don't have to bring up my childhood. But do you find yourself like kind of calling the game in your head a little bit? Or I would have said this here. Or...
No, I don't do any of that.
Not even subliminally?
I couldn't tell you the last time I listened to a game that I did.
Yeah, well, sure. Yeah, that would be weird.
There's also too much work. Yeah,
it's out there. It's done. Let's move on.
Yeah, it's too weird. I mean...
But like when they do those montages and stuff of like, you know, the 2008 season, I know they're doing a special one. I think NBCSN is going to be doing that.
Mm-hmm.
When you hear your voice on those big moments, like, is that like something that kind of freaks you out, or does it take you back, or how do you feel hearing your voice?
Well, it's funny because I hear my voice more in big moments, more in things like the ESPN documentary on the Big East.
Where you were all over that.
I was because I was doing all the big games.
Yeah.
unfortunately, now we do all the regular season games in the first round of the playoffs, and then when the big moments, like against LeBron, I mean, who wouldn't want to be calling that game last night if you're a Celtic fan?
Well, yeah. I guarantee you they're coming out with, for some ungodly reason, they're coming out with a 10-part Michael Jordan Netflix documentary.
10-part?
10 parts.
Amazing. Which, you
it's
know
10
what?
10 hours.
Give me, I could maybe do 3 hours tops.
No. Nope.
Of almost
not
any topic.
That. But, Rich, I know everything about him, including, like, the lie that he didn't make the varsity team.
Unless
blah,
they were
blah,
able
blah.
To bring up, like, old videos that have not been
they
shown
videos
before.
They have videos that have not been shown before.
But I don't 10 think hours. 10 hours. Dude, 10 hours. No. There's literally no topic that I would want to watch 10 hours of video
I
was gonna on.
Say, I love the documentary Hoop Dreams, and that was an hour too long. Well, listen, Mike Gorman, you're my favorite guest that we have. You truly are my favorite guest, and I love it when you come in studio.
We've been doing this for a long time now.
We have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's cool.
5 years? 4 or 5 years?
Like I said, you, the three of you talk to basketball, and I just come in and say something stupid every now and again. So that's why I like it.
Because you're good at it.
Thank you.
Something stupid. You're good at that.
Thank you. That's all I've ever wanted, really.
Dad?
Oh, no. All right. Mike Gorman, thank you so much for
the time.
I feel
like you guys should go out back and have catch, you know, a little game of catch together.
Just, you can just lay into me about something dumb. Called my dad yesterday.
How is he?
He couldn't figure out what was going on with me as much as I could figure out what was going on with me. All right.
It's T&R.
I heard you like to party.
The Sports Hub.
I mean, that's not the way human beings act.
Follow these guys on Twitter at Kutcher and Rich.
Boy, did Twitter explode.
Hi, everybody. I'm Mike Gorman along with Tom Hines, and welcome back to our coverage of Boston Celtic basketball.
Tonight, Gorman was inducted into the Radio Hall of Fame.
Come on, come on. I see no changes. Wake up in the morning and I ask myself, Kutcher and Rich, should I blast myself? Same old jokes, even worse is Fred. Man, don't know Dick. Makes me wish I was dead. Wallach and Rich trying hard to be funny. Can't believe those two getting money. Sucking up to guess who the hell cares. Just shoot me now, throw me down the stairs. Sitting at the mic trying to sound real big. How'd these boys ever land this gig? Every day it's the same old baloney. Judge must have been on something to give him a Marconi. Just gets worse as the day goes on. Felger and Mass, brain-numbing Egothon. Gotta start making changes. Would you rather Zoe and Beetle or two distant strangers? Come on, Tommy Heinsohn, what you think of this?
Are you kidding? That's ridiculous.
You gotta take it from T, a brother close to me.
Puckhead.
That's just the way it is.
That's just the way it is.
Come on, come on.
That's how it's supposed to be.
Yeah, yeah, tell him, T, tell him.
That's just the way it is.
Don't hold back, T, give it your all.
Are you kidding me?
Mike G and the T, out.
Take that, 98 Mile.
The greatest thing about that is when Gorman called Heinsohn and there was legit like a movie from 1920 on it.
You could just see like the masked man in like the trench coat slowly moving with the pistol.
Yeah, we're going to plug him, see?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll pound you.
Yeah, it was like a Jimmy Durante film. He was watching it at that point.
So
it's always a pleasure to have Mike Gorman.
It's always good having him in, and he's a... It's funny because, you know, he was talking about the ratings whenever they have to be simulcast at the same time. When you have two different companies broadcasting the same game, NBC Sports Boston, and then you've got like a TNT or ABC or whoever it is. And obviously, they absolutely pound the other one in the ratings. Like, the local broadcast always does better here. And maybe there's a reason. And one of those reasons is because sometimes there are storylines and plot lines that just are BS, and it just seems like somebody has thrown it down the pipe, such as you need to sell that Tyronn Lue is a good coach. And we've been talking about this for a while.
Oh, good, we found this?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
well,
good.
There's a couple things we need to get to from the broadcast last night. Let's first start with the whole Tyronn Lue is a good coach, because even Mike Gorman is sitting here going, I can't say anything good about this guy. I mean, there's really nothing. And he's been friends with Ty Lue for years because of him being tied in with the organization. Yep. But you got to kind of call it as you see it. So here are the people yesterday, Mike Breen and Mark Jackson and Jeff Van Gundy.
Yep.
Talk about Ty Lue.
There are two outstanding coaches in this series.
Okay, first of all, I thought I was going to say Brad Stevens and LeBron James. I honestly thought that's what he was going to say.
And by the way, this is while the game is going on. Mark Jackson
and also Mark Jackson is an idiot. I mean, he's a full-blown idiot.
Mark Jackson was not able to succeed with that Golden State lineup that he had.
And also, not only not able to succeed, he was a detriment to them. And
yes,
he caused friction in the locker room.
And he was an ass to Scalabrine, which that
well,
is,
that was
in,
part
in my
of,
opinion.
That, I mean, I, well, it's not your opinion. He was an ass to Scalabrine. And the idea that he thought that Scalabrine was in some way like trying to usurp his power is a sign of just how low he thinks of himself.
Yes, Cal was an assistant coach for a minute there with Golden State.
And they moved him to the D-League.
They
the
did.
G-League or whatever.
So here they are talking about Ty Lue, saying how great a coach he is.
There are two outstanding coaches in this series. Two outstanding coaches. Brad Stevens is an outstanding coach, and Tyronn Lue has been an outstanding coach from day one. He has won 62% of his games in the regular season.
LeBron
He's
James.
Been the back-to-back champion.
I've grown weary of him not getting the credit as Korver makes a three, or two. Him not getting the credit because he has LeBron James on his team. If we're going to discount all the great coaches from being noted as great coaches because they've coached elite players, then we are not going to have great coaches.
All right, stop with that, because I don't discount Eric Spoelstra, and I didn't even when LeBron James played for him.
There we did first. A lot of people did, and I did too.
But by the end of his run with him, you agree, at least I came around. I was like, you know what? Say what you will, Spoelstra's made some moves that actually made sense.
I disagree. I think the true genius of Spoelstra has been since LeBron left.
See, I specifically remember.
As long as LeBron, and he had LeBron, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh, as long as those three guys were there, regardless of what moves he made, and we agreed with it at the time, it was LeBron's team.
No, and I remember during the Spurs series, you remember the one where Ray Allen ended up winning it for him during that
right.
Spurs series? I remember specifically during that series, him making like changes where I was like, you know what? For the first time, I'm going to say it. Eric Spoelstra is a good coach.
Well, I don't think it. I didn't feel that way.
I think the only way you can truly measure a coach is without a guy, without guys like that. Brad Stevens, for example. Well, he has not had guys like that. Mm-hmm. And look how successful he's been. Look at the roster that Spoelstra has had over the last 3 years and how good that team is.
But if you could say
the fact that they made the playoffs is a miracle.
But if you could say that this crew was going to fill our airwaves with BS, what would be the hottest of the hot takes that you could possibly throw out there about any of the people who are on the court? I'd say number one on that list might be that Kyle Korver is good on defense. And guess what? They did it last night.
Kyle Korver has just been outstanding, and he's tougher and better defensively than most people would assume.
Well, that's not saying much.
I'm just going to say.
He's always in the right place defensively.
No, he's not.
He's not the most athletic defensively.
No.
He's always in the right
place. No, he's not.
To me, the thing is, he just competes.
Two is greater than one on a scale of 100.
Look, in the scale of professional sports that I enjoy, the NBA isn't at the top of my list. Kyle Korver has been on fire from the three-point line and been removed from games because he was so terrible defensively.
How about who got picked on the most in game one defensively? That would be Kyle Korver.
How about he didn't start because he's so terrible defensively? I tell you, I saw, and I keep mentioning it, one of the funnier sequences I've ever seen from a professional basketball player is Korver was shooting out of his shoes. He couldn't miss. He was fadeaway threes, you know, 2 feet behind the arc. Couldn't miss. They started running. They had four guys on the court send screens for him. He couldn't get open. And then his man was beating him down the court, and it was against the Celtics. And the Celtics had something like 6 fast break points right in a row
right.
because of Korver.
Yeah, that was the Hawks series. Yep.
Korver is atrocious defensively. He is a
specialist.
He's
better than you'd assume, though, if you believe these guys.
Okay, fine. I assume that
he's
he can't
a bag
play.
Of crap, right?
So maybe at one point he stood in front of his guy. But even I know. I mean, Korver knows. He goes, I'm an old guy who's still in the league because I'm a sharpshooter. If you get me the ball, I can shoot off the pass and I can shoot with the hand in my face and I'm good. But I'm certainly not here for my defense or reading the court. Oh boy. Yeah, he's.
I heard that last night, and I about fell out of my seat.
I don't know why you have to do it either. Like, I don't understand who that like who that's for. Like everyone's sitting around going, I wonder when they're going to give Kyle Korver his due. Like, I'm sitting here, I'm the biggest Kyle Korver. How many jerseys did that guy sold? Please.
He was on the billboard in Atlanta.
Well, if he played in Boston, he probably sold 5 million. All right. We will be back, Rich. What will we talk about?
Oh, well, there's another documentary that's coming out that we can get to. On top of that, Whit Grosbeck was actually on with Felger and Maz yesterday and said some things that were fairly interesting about the future of the Boston Celtics. We'll get to that.
Here are the headlines.
Toucher and Rich.
Self-help shenanigans.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Now it's time to get to the stuff that we couldn't get to. It's the stack.
Stack it up. 98.5, the Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Rich, certainly, but what have we not gotten to today?
I got to hear a little bit of this yesterday. Whit Grosbeck, of course, one of the co-owners of your Boston Celtics, was on with Felger and Maz. And we answered a ton of questions about, you know, how the team is doing now. But I thought one of the more interesting answers that he had was about all the moves that this team did in the offseason and seeing that, you know, as of yesterday, this team was essentially at the exact same place that they ended last year with one win in the Eastern Conference Finals before yesterday's game. They were asked, why did you feel the need to make so many drastic changes when you made it to the Eastern Conference Finals just like this team? And I liked his answer.
And try it again. It was Marcel Marceau.
Let's try it again.
Whatever the hell.
And his answer was
Laurel. Got stomped by the Cavs, and they pretty much got rolled by the Warriors. Right. That's the way how it happened last year, as I recall. So we were a good step or two away.
Okay. Right? Do you feel that?
So
changed?
I don't think we've gotten two steps better. I don't know what's changed. I just want to play the games right now. I'm too nervous to even discuss it.
Yeah,
I am. I'm nervous.
He went on to say that the team was nowhere near good enough to be anywhere close to winning a championship, and that's why the drastic changes, even with Brad Stevens there. And so that's why they had to make the drastic changes. And by the way, that right there that I just played?
Laurel.
It's funny how all day yesterday I thought Laurel, and then I played it for my wife, and when I played it for her, I heard Yanny.
So, it depends how you listen to it. It ended up being kind
of
lame.
Yeah, it's there's some sort of tone. It's like how you're like what speakers you're listening to
Deadspin
it through.
Deadspin had it both ways. They had modulated it both ways, and it so it goes Laurel, Laurel, Yanny, Yanny.
It's like in my headphones, I hear Laurel, but when at home when I played it out of my phone, I heard Yanny.
Yeah.
Very, very strange.
It's nothing but a parlor trick, my friends.
Well, there's been a whole lot more news being made and speculation regarding the eventual legalization of sports gambling in a lot of states. And yesterday, Mark Cuban was on CNBC, and they were asking him about it, and he said that he believes that the floodgates have opened up for more people to watch all of the so much more sports that the value of each team in the Big Four might double. He says the value of every team in the Big Four sports could possibly double because of sports gambling.
Jesus.
He also went on to talk about something that I had not thought about. He said the gambling at home experience is going to be such a major thing in sports that it is going to force the technology in televisions to move ahead faster. In other words, there is a somewhat of a drag between seeing something live on the field when it's happening and you being able to watch it at the exact same time at home. It's usually several seconds. Now, some of that has to do with the actual delay that the network has, but another part of it has to do with the technology, just being able to have it broadcast and at the exact same time.
Right.
And he said because of this and because of the immediacy of wanting to be able to bet on the speed of the next pitch, on what happens on the next play, that television manufacturers are going to be forced to advance their technology to make it an exact by-the-moment broadcast of every sporting event
finally
that is shown.
So, I've been praying for that kind of technology for so long.
So it's like when you're standing outside of Fenway because you don't have a ticket, you're looking at the TVs from the outside of Cask and Flagon, and you hear the crowd going crazy on the inside, but on the TV you don't know what's going to happen.
I mean, there my kingdom for a television that gets rid of that delay.
I thought it was kind of an interesting thing. The technology
I didn't say it wasn't interesting. I just think it's unnecessary.
You know what Robinson Cano is? A low-down, dirty cheater.
He's like Jesse James.
Mm-hmm. 80 games. He's going to be suspended without pay by Major League Baseball after testing positive for a banned substance called furosemide.
A masking agent.
It is
it's a diuretic. He says it's a diuretic agent for medicinal reasons, but it's a masking agent, and apparently Major League Baseball wouldn't have gone ahead with this unless they had proof that he used it to mask something else. So
Cano appealed at the end of the exhibition season, and Major League Baseball came back to him and said, no, we pretty much have proof they used it as a masking agent. Wouldn't you know Cano dropped his appeal?
Yeah, he's like, yeah, I'm not going to fight.
Miguel Cabrera, by the way, is like livid about this whole thing. I looked at the Free Press today,
really?
And like, it's all about Miguel Cabrera being like furious that they did this to Cano.
I saw Justin.
Even if he happens to be guilty?
Just he's furious okay. that they did that to Cano.
What's up with his hero? Maybe he should call Cano and say, wow, sorry, dude. That's too bad.
He's very mad.
Yes.
I saw Justin Verlander tweet something. Here come the excuses in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So there you go. Justin Verlander.
Yeah, but he's been too busy at home with you know who.
Mm-hmm.
Playing a little tuna in Tokyo.
Getting some good loving.
Boobies.
Well, this is amazing because the series isn't even over yet, and we're already getting this from Chris Broussard, who is, by the way, the one thing, I'll make fun of Chris Broussard, but I do believe that he's a mouthpiece for some athletes, including LeBron James. Wasn't he the only guy who knew where LeBron James was going when he made the decision?
He had the call early, yes.
He's a mouthpiece also for our Lord and Savior.
Well, that's what he has said.
Self-appointed.
That's right. Yes.
Well, mm-hmm. I believe he speaks, that the Lord speaks through Chris Broussard.
Mm-hmm. Well, guess what Chris Broussard is reporting? He's saying that
there's no dinosaurs.
Yes, the devil put the dinosaurs here.
Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve.
That's right. I think he has a shirt that says that.
Probably.
He might. He said, I've been told by somebody that would know that LeBron wants to play off the ball. Okay, so here it comes. LeBron wants to leave, and he probably wants. Let me guess. He continues. I'm talking about LeBron going to Philly and playing more like a true small forward. Okay. Series isn't even over yet, and this is being leaked out. What I was told was that LeBron has done that because he's never really had a teammate who was a playmaker for other guys.
What?
There's a guy named Kyrie Irving.
Yeah,
they used him first.
I vaguely remember he won you a championship.
They used a number one pick on
my God, a
young man from Duke.
Never really had
that fit the bill.
Had a teammate.
He might be the best ball handler, arguably one of the top five ball handlers in NBA history. That you had. It's certainly the best ball handler playing right now.
Mm-hmm. Not a playmaker
of our generation.
For other guys.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, have fun with Ben Simmons handling the basketball for you.
Oh, and also have fun that the two of you are essentially the same player minus the outside shot. That redundancy is not going to be apparent at all. The 6'10 point guard and then LeBron James.
See, if he goes to L.A., you have a guy who doesn't want to shoot the basketball and Lonzo Ball.
It's true. That is true.
Please, plus, it's just this grenade in my hand. Take it from
plus
me.
Plus, if you stand next to him, you'll look like way better looking.
Well, I think they can say that for anybody. Gorman seems to be convinced that he's going to go out west, which I don't believe that for a second. I mean, Gorman obviously knows way more about all this stuff and is more inside than any of us. But
he'd
why
be miserable in Houston.
Hell?
He would be absolutely miserable in Houston.
Well, I agree.
Him and Harden are going to do what? Like, how do they coexist?
They don't.
They don't.
They don't coexist.
They do not. And if you tell me that they'll figure it out, they're not going to. And it's not an insult to either of them.
But why just not go to Philly? Like, if you're him, Philly seems ready for you. Like, just plug you in and you got a team.
Yep.
And I don't understand why you would leave the East because
funny. Some Sixers fans don't want LeBron on their team.
A lot do. A lot do not.
Well, I could take a quick straw poll of my in-laws. None of them want LeBron.
Yeah.
Why don't they want him?
The idea is that I'm not giving you the process thing. The idea is that they're building a core of young talent, and then if you bring LeBron in, it sets a lot of them back.
Guys like Saric, for example, who showed up in the playoffs, was really good. If you add LeBron, Saric has literally no role on that team.
Well, who cares? Because you have LeBron James. Who cares about Saric?
The idea is that him going to the team is by no means a guarantee of a title, and if you continue to develop this talent, that you have a core and you could bring in a younger max guy that would be part of the core for many years to come.
Okay. Well, I mean, that sounds all right. My only problem with that is that you have another team in the East that has a young core as well, but they're better than your young core.
Right.
And they just proved it in the Boston Celtics.
It's very true. But then you can
But I like what you're saying about bringing in a younger Max guy.
Yeah, and then you bring in like a younger Max guy.
Well, they're going to go after Kawhi. If they can't get LeBron, they're going to go after Kawhi,
right,
from what I
and
heard.
So, I mean, that's kind of the idea. I don't think that there's a right or wrong answer to that. Well, Scott Zolak and Mark Bertrand have a show that will be joining us in just a matter of moments. And we'll find out what they have on the way.
Toucher and Rich, 98.5, the Sports Hub. All right.
.5 the Sports Hub tomorrow, Tony Jeopardy at 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. If you want in on it, you got maybe a couple more minutes if you want to submit something, because we got to make a decision on our third person. There's a third person, third seat that has not yet been filled. And if
how
you
many submissions? You get any submissions?
Yeah, we have a few, but I have to go through them. But if you want to get in on it, we're going to make a decision here in the next few minutes. So make like a little video that's a minute or less. And tweet it to us, at Toucher and Rich, hashtag Tony Jeopardy. And maybe, just maybe, you will be able to compete in that tomorrow at 8 o'clock.
Another whiff on Saugus' own adult film star, Tyler Faith, who very much wants to come into the studio, but is in LA, Vegas right now.
Hmm.
And then Nicky Knuckles never getting back to Nick.
That's crazy. Why no Nicky Knuckles?
Well, because maybe Nicky Knuckles isn't exactly who he said he is.
No, oh, yeah, you think so?
Maybe he's not the street brawler from Quincy that we think. Maybe he's some fat cat from Lexington.
Oh, maybe it is. Living a lie.
Living a lie. But you know who will be in tomorrow? A man who won my heart.
Mm-hmm.
Man by the name of Pasta.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Yeah. Pasta.
Pasta.
I'll get up around 10 a.m., eat a bowl of pasta.
He is one of our contestants in Towny Jeopardy. And then, you know what? Maybe we just, like, do Towny Jeopardy an hour later and make Cedric Maxwell one of our contestants. Because he's going to be in at 9.
I'd like to see that. At least for a couple of minutes, I'd like to see that.
I know one category we have to have.
What's that?
Oh, I'm not going to say
that. Okay. You'll just tell me off the air. All right.
Yeah. I know.
I love Towny Jeopardy.
Yeah, I know one category that we absolutely have to have.
Okay.
Is Lanny in?
Listen, I'd love to have Billy Lanny be on Towny Jeopardy. I think he'd be great.
He's like King Towny, man.
Have we ever had him on Towny Jeopardy?
I thought we had him on the very first one.
Lanny was on the first one.
With the dude and Bird. That Lanny was the third guy.
Joe Murray was on the second one.
Right. He was the second one. Yep. But Lanny was on the first one with Dude and Bird.
And then and then we had Nora. Nora, who knew the name of that liquor store, the Bunghole Liquors. Remember that one?
Yep.
In Salem. That's right. Bunghole Liquors in Salem. She was all about that. And, so we will have the pasta guy, Bird, defending his title, and then whoever we figure out. So
Mike behind the mic.
Pasta.
Doesn't he work at this liquor store down the street?
No, he worked at Murray's.
Like, oh, my God.
Yeah, he worked at Murray's Liquors.
There's the pasta guy.
I got the Wheaties jacket on.
We could get Fat Mike. Was his name Fat Mike?
From NoFX?
Not Fat Mike. Fat Tony. His name was Fat Tony. Yeah. That's right.
Is that the guy who... I always said, let's just get Fat Tony.
Look at this guy.
That's Fat Tony. Tony won.
He won the whole thing.
I would have Fat Tony in just to check his blood pressure again.
How about Bird's friend with the Everett tattoo, who just puts videos on Facebook of him digging holes?
Yeah, he loves to dig holes.
Bird's not even like a townie. He's like
Mr. Personality.
It's his cousin. No, he was
they're
great.
Not even townies. They're like losers.
That's the difference.
Like Billy Lanny. Like whatever dude. That's a townie.
Sure. No, Lanny was great. He fits the bill.
But his friend, Bird's friend from Everett, is like, he does like it all around. And he's like he'll go out of town, and he's just like so proud that he digs these holes. It's like legit 50 videos of him digging holes. And it's not like a skyscraper, or like he's not like, you know, like here's the foundation of the home.
No, it's like a hole.
Like these skilled, or it's brickwork, or it's, you know, shingling a roof. It's literally just making a hole in the ground.
What about his friend he always gets in fights with?
His arch nemesis.
His name is Dick, right?
Yeah, let's have his nemesis.
Evil Dick. Oh,
that's right. I forgot about him.
Bird and Evil Dick. That would be great.
Oh, okay, Evil Dick.
That's what we'll do.
We got to get him. Oh, that would be great. Bird, Pasta Guy, and Evil Dick.
Yeah.
Oh, we got to get him in.
It was my first horror movie.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Whatever your name from Hustler, Larry Flint.
Whatever my name.
Yes, where's Larry Flint's Gerald? We haven't seen him in a while.
That's a good point.
It was...
You sound like more like that guy Hannibal Lecter killed that movie.
Gatsby was a great influence on me.
Virgil, right? What's the guy's name? Virgil?
From which movie?
Ophelia.
The Hannibal Lecter one.
Hannibal.
Remember Hannibal where he goes out in the woods?
Oh, you were the castle? Pigs.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hardly remember that movie other than like...
Oh, he had his face off.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. Gary Oldman, I think, was the dude in the wheelchair with the messed up face because they ate it. How you doing, Scott? You having a good morning?
Yeah, yeah. Tired, man.
Yeah.
Long drive in. Like, these late games, man, just makes you so tired the next day.
It was fun, though. At least it was a game worth watching. Yeah.
It was great.
It's the blowouts that suck.
You just can't believe it. Just can't believe
They're
it.
They're going to the finals.
It's over.
They're going
to the finals. That was serious last night.
It's over.
That team ain't winning four of the next five.
LeBron delivered his best haymaker, and even Kevin Love had a great game. They tried everything they could with the lineup, and they still lost by double digits. It's over.
It's unbelievable.
Yep.
It really is. How about Robert Parrish?
Man, he's a solid coach.
Yeah.
Solid. They're all jealous.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of that coach, I think we have him on. Jim, we have coach on today, correct?
You got Stevens? Sir.
Brad Stevens will join the program.
Nice. See if you can make him swear.
Intern's my intern. Today. Yep, there
1250.
He is.
1250, Brad Stevens will be in. He found out the intern doesn't even follow me on Twitter.
Oh, man.
Dude, well, Fred, this kid.
One strike.
Talk about these millennials.
Ophelia was my Zelda. Yep. This is for literary.
Just when you think we've moved on. From Larry Flint, he comes crawling right back.
Ophelia was trying to be my demise.
I'll be honest.
She was my Zelda.
Larry, what's your 401k like? You have a big one?
The bastards are trying to take my money. Like they try to take my life in Georgia.
I'll say that one of my favorite things in production that I've ever done, and I don't think only Fred and I find it funny, is this.
No one finds the Larry Flint thing funny but me and my friend Jason Daniel.
It's not silly.
Is when we played Larry Flint bingo one time.
There was a farmer, had a dog, and bingo was his name. Oh.
Kaiser.
Endio.
Kenna.
Endio.
Ew.
Endio.
Kaiser.
I think only Fred and I find that funny.
Yep. And then Larry Fitzgerald.
Larry Flintgerald.
Yeah,
it was the
same
era
of trading.
It was the area of jazz.
No, that's Fitzgerald. That's his,
yeah,
no,
Fitzgerald.
No, we're talking about the football player. Larry Flintgerald.
I do it both.
You're thinking F. Scott Flintgerald.
F. Scott.
Hang on.
Fitzgerald.
They blew the whistle and I slid down the dinosaur tail.
That's the Flintstones.
Fred Flintgerald.
Larry Flintstone.
Mr. Slade is a corrupt hypocrite.
Okay. I'm on board with this. I used to
look at Betty through the window.
Okay.
Oh.
We can stop that.
The Great Gazoo, I wish. For the government to get off my back.
Okay, you're going to make Greg Gazzuta a-hole of the month.
No, because Slate's the a-hole of the month.
Only you and I find this funny. You realize
that. No, I don't even think you find it funny. I've been doing Larry
F. Scott Flintgerald.
That's the one.
That's pretty good.
That's really good.
Yeah. Gatsby was a fraud and a hypocrite. My time in the Hamptons with him ultimately ended in tragedy.
I think there's people in the other room who are anxious to get on the air, Fred.
Okay, I just was told it's not our show anymore. All right, everyone have a great day. That'll do it for us. Bye.